from clinics, schools, and CBOs have provided in their enthusiasm in taking this campaign out and reaching youth on the ground. Our last presenter is Mary McFarlane, who is the Prevention Partnerships Coordinator at CDC. She has a PhD in quantitative psychology and has been with CDC since 1996. Her work has focused on the use of the internet to prevent risky sexual behaviors, and her internet work led to a series of projects involving technology applications for a range of populations. Realizing that such work is best done in partnership with other organizations, Mary became Prevention Partnerships Coordinator in 2009, and since then she's been coordinating partnerships for GYT, including the toolkit, which hopefully a lot of you have seen and used, and other on-the-ground resources. And today she'll be presenting evaluation of GYT. Thank you, Mary.
Okay, so first, thank you to everybody who has hung in all the way till almost 5 o'clock, because this is ridiculous, and I'm really, really impressed. You're like my heroes. So, I'm sorry, but, you know, I get bored. I understand. This presentation is about using existing data sources to gather evidence of success. And this is really describing what happens when you can't do a randomized clinical trial, because we would all love to do a nice controlled trial where, you know, there's a control condition and an investment in a treatment condition. But by and large, you can either do that trial or you can do the campaign, but you're not going to be able to afford to do both. So let me tell you how kind of the textbook version of campaign evaluation would go. First, you would conduct some formative research. You would develop the key messages. You'd use focus groups, individual and small group interviews. You'd do surveys. You would develop some creative materials, some cool pictures, some nice TV shows, and you would try them out on different members of the audience, and you'd ask them what they thought. And then you'd gather baseline data on target behaviors, you'd launch your program, and then later you'd gather some follow-up data to see if it all worked out. That's the textbook version. You'd also have, and this is a GYT model, which you will not be able to read because I can't even read it on this screen, but this is actually a logic model that tells you what the inputs are into the campaign, the activities and outputs, and then the effects and outcomes over the short, intermediate, and long term. Now, the reality version of how you evaluate a communications campaign, or at least how you evaluate the GYT campaign. This campaign developed organically. It started very small with a suggestion from someone at Planned Parenthood that, hey, these STD rates seem really crazy. Why don't we do something about this? They found a strong partnership that already existed and formed an even larger, stronger partnership. And then the partnership expanded the campaign sort of opportunistically. As we found success, we went in that direction, and where we found barriers, we didn't go in that direction. So when you start something like this organically, you don't have baseline data that are established already. And so you try to gather the metrics that are already being gathered out there in the organizations. But there's a key problem. A lot of the metrics that are going to be presented here were never originally intended for the purpose of evaluating GYT. These data were being gathered for other reasons. So because of that, they're not a perfect evaluation, but they are the data that we have, and it's better to look at data that you have than to look at nothing at all. So I should also say the partner organizations each have different methods of evaluating their own investments, and you've seen some of those evaluations already today. But the best approach, we think, is to combine all that data from all those different stories and tell kind of an overarching story of how well GYT went. So first I want to start with one existing data source, which is marketing surveys. Now these are the kind of surveys that people sign up for through the mail, through the internet, on the phone, and they get routine surveys regularly. Marketing firms will maintain these mailing and telephone lists, which they call their panel. And that might be like 300,000 people in a panel. And then periodically, they'll send out surveys to selected samples of that panel. So they might only send the survey to 2,500 people, but they select those 2,500 from their 300,000. The surveys involve everything from, like, do you have the internet in your home? Do you wear Nikes or do you wear Reeboks? Do you use, which kind of deodorant do you use? Oh, by the way, do you use condoms? You know, on and on and on. There's all kinds of different pieces of data that are gathered in these surveys. But as it turns out, we can purchase from CDC, we can purchase a few items on these surveys for a relatively low cost. It's not the greatest method in the world, obviously, in terms of scientific data gathering, but it is cheap and it's available, and they do it regularly. So for 3 years, we purchased data on different surveys. For 2009 and 10, we went to Porter Novelli's Youth Styles data set, which covered people ages 13 to 19, and we got around 800 people in each of those 2 years. In 2011, we went with the TRUE study, which more accurately matches our target population, which is our target population is 15 to 25. TRUE gets ages 15 to 24, and we got about 2,300 people there. Again, I want to emphasize these data aren't the ideal way to analyze a campaign from start to finish. It's a low response rate. It's not generalizable to the nation. They're not randomly selected people. And these surveys are really long. They contain questions that I said are totally irrelevant to GYT itself. And sometimes questions are asked differently from year to year. That said, again, these are surveys that go out to a lot of people, and there's no special reason why we would be queuing them to say that they saw GYT. If it was a GYT-only survey, there's a little bit of social desirability that can work in there. Maybe I'll actually go to the next slide. Okay. So we asked the simple question, have you heard of GYT? In 2009, Porter Novelli gave us these data, as you see, between 15 and 18%, depending on how you look at our data. In 2010, the numbers were different. Again, these are different people each time the survey is offered. So the awareness was up to around 19 to 20%. And looking at the TRUE survey, which again more accurately reflects our target population, we're up around 25%. In the TRUE data from 2011, we said, have you seen these following campaigns? And the campaigns that we listed are Greater Than AIDS, which is another partnership effort from Kaiser Family Foundation, Stay Teen, I don't actually know that campaign, GYT, our own campaign, Above the Influence, which is very well known, and Lock It or Leave It, which totally does not exist, and we made up that name. But there's a reason. I just told you this is not great data. I just told you. You don't know what kind of answers people are giving on data sets. So you make up a random campaign name that doesn't actually exist anywhere, and you ask if they've heard of it. So you figure 6.2% of people are just out and out liars or are overestimating. You know, Lock It or Leave It does sound like something you might have heard of, you know. So it's reasonable that they're not lying. They're just thinking, oh, yeah, that sounds good. So if you look at the data on awareness, Above the Influence is obviously very popular. And the next one that's most popular is GYT. I should also clarify that these campaigns are all different in the tactics that they use, in the target audience that they're looking for, and the behavior that they're targeting. But this is a kind of an overall, have you heard of it kind of question. In the TRUE data, again, we asked whether people have been tested for an STD or HIV. People who had seen GYT, 19% of them had been tested for an STD or HIV, whereas if they had not seen GYT, only 11% had been tested. So again, not perfect data, but data that certainly suggests that this campaign is being successful. Other data that we did gather on this campaign, just in case you're interested, we asked them whether they talked to their friends, to their healthcare provider, or to a parent about STD or HIV testing. We asked if they'd seen a doctor or healthcare provider in general, not for an STD test. And then, of course, we asked this question about testing. Now, another existing data source, and these data are probably our best data because they were closest to being gathered for the purposes of this campaign, come from our partners at Planned Parenthood Federation of America, who, if you ever want great partners, they are great partners. We get data from them for every April, covers the month of April only, not the entire year, but for every April from 2009 through 2011, and what we've looked up is the increase in the population of people coming in as STD patients. Now, this is, again, a crude measure. They say, are you here for an STD visit? Are you here for, you know, depo shot? Are you here for whatever the reason might be? But as you can tell, the clients that identify as STD patients went from 97,000 in 2009 to 110,000 in 2011. You can see that the female clients increased, but the male clients in particular, that's a pretty substantial percent increase if you look over time. The percentage of patients who are 25 and under, which is obviously the group that we're looking for, is increasing over time. And again, male patients who are reporting for chlamydia and gonorrhea testing, that's a huge increase and a population that's important to both Planned Parenthood and ourselves. Again, these are the same. These are 57 affiliates who have reported for 2009, 2010, and 2011. The important thing about these 57 affiliates is that they haven't changed over the course of this time. A lot of things have changed. Planned Parenthood affiliates have multiple clinics, and sometimes they merge, and sometimes they break up, and sometimes they have to close down altogether for political purposes. But these 57 affiliates have continued the same over the course of this campaign. And I'm just showing you some race statistics and ethnicity statistics. Some of the important pieces of this are that the population of STD patients who are African American has increased over time. And again, we see that males have increased substantially. So looking at just testing behavior alone, what we're interested in particular, is chlamydia testing. There are whole other talks about the HIV testing, and you can look at gonorrhea testing, but the data that are probably the best that we have are the chlamydia tests. And the percent positive, first of all, the number of being tested over time is up. I think that's about a 12% increase over these 3 years. And importantly, the percent who are positive are up. Now, this is a really key statistic for us, because by increasing the denominator, you can kill your cost effectiveness, you can kill your positivity rate, you might get the worried well over and over again. These data are telling us that we're not getting the worried well, that we're actually getting people who need to be chlamydia tested in for chlamydia testing. It seems like a very basic result, but it makes us very happy. Again, I want to draw your attention to the men in the study, who in 2009 we had 9.9% positive. In 2011, we had 12% positive. So it looks like the effect of bringing in more men is helping us find more chlamydia cases, that's for sure. These particular data represent 10 reporting affiliates who not only have given us data 2009 through 2011, but also provided us with some retroactive data on 2008. And what they indicate is that in those particular affiliates, and again, they're not randomly chosen or anything like that, STD patients are up about 50%. Those who are age 25 and under, you can look at the numbers yourself. But we are getting more clients who are non-white, and we are getting more chlamydia testing done and more positive chlamydia tests. Now, another source of data about chlamydia testing is the CDC Infertility Prevention Project, which provides funding for chlamydia and gonorrhea testing in low-income women in family planning settings, as well as their partners. These data have been gathered since 2003. And again, there are many problems with these data, particularly the fact that they're not gathered for the purpose of evaluating GYT. But I wanted to show you that each of the squares on this little data set here are April. If you look at the squares over time, we look like we're doing fairly well. 2009 and 2010 are the greatest number of chlamydia tests ever conducted by the Infertility Prevention Project. I am curious, and someday somebody is going to be able to explain this to me. Every year, pretty much, it looks like March and April are the highest number of chlamydia tests performed. And I'm dying to know what is March and April. So, what's that?
Spring break.
I've heard spring break. I've heard it's you know, 6 weeks after Valentine's Day. I've heard a lot of things. But if anybody actually knows specifically why March and April would be the highest number of STD tests, I would just die to know that. These are specifically male STD tests, or male chlamydia tests, rather, performed by the Infertility Prevention Project. As I mentioned, it's about sex partners as well as the women involved in the family planning settings. And again, you can see that we have our highest, our best Aprils are in the most recent couple years. So what I want to emphasize here are not only these conclusions, but imperfect data are better than no data. And the reason that imperfect data are excellent is that if they tell the right story, if you can combine those data and you see evidence of success, people will let you keep going with the campaign. And not only will they let you keep going, they might even fund you to get better data about whether the campaign can be evaluated and how well it's doing. So it's really important that even if you are doing a campaign where you don't actually have great data, you get what data you can and try to tell that story. Another conclusion is that when you're evaluating a communications campaign, the national baseline of silence is actually a really convenient thing. Because no, we didn't gather baseline data on how many conversations were going on about chlamydia testing, nor did we actually have any evidence that GYT is the thing that made all of these numbers go up. But we do have a pretty good sense that nobody else was doing a national chlamydia testing campaign. Elton John didn't suddenly start writing songs about herpes. So we're pretty clear that there are actually, that this is a campaign that has contributed strongly to those numbers. We're also pretty clear that there wasn't a sudden influx of dollars into the STD prevention budgets. So we're sure that the funding situation didn't contribute to this situation. And again, you know, most people's tax bases have gone down considerably, so there isn't that much new funding for public health. So the amassed evidence in general strongly supports the evidence that GYT is a successful campaign. We hope to keep gathering more evidence. We hope to hear from all of you who have implemented GYT, and we thank you hugely for being a part of it. Thanks.
So thanks to all of our panelists. And I would also add to that that if nothing more, we are adding noise into the media environment and getting it on people's radar, which is more than there was before. And we are writing a herpes song, if anyone knows a celebrity willing to take our lyrics. If anyone has questions, please step up to the mic. And while you're thinking of your questions, I'm just going to give a shameless plug for some GYT-related posters in case you're not GYT'd out. Posters 193, 195, and 127 showcase some local efforts. 193 is Johns Hopkins' use of social media through the I Want the Kit. And 127 is the University of Texas at Pan Am's, their experience implementing GYT. And then 195 is advertising through Facebook for sexual health efforts. And one of those examples is GYT. So please ask away.
Hang on, we're just debating which one of us is going to be the sacrificial lamb. I nominate.
And well, I'll answer the first question, and it's a fair question because in the abstract we did say we were going to give a preview for 2012. Although, as it turns out, and this maybe sometimes is the case a lot more often than not, that there are some very exciting things that MTV is working on, and it usually is MTV that manages to secure either new talent or funding to produce the PSAs or the programming. And none of it is official, and so they've actually asked us not to give it away and jinx things, but there are some exciting things that probably will not be ready as of April 1st, but hopefully something might be available come the end of April. And we can mention, do you think it's ready to mention the Be Smart, Be Well?
Yeah.
Who said that? we are working with the it's the Blue Cross Blue Shield HMO. Melissa would probably be better to explain this to me.
It's the Midwest region. They represent Illinois, Texas, Ohio, and New Mexico.
And they're actually developing an educational video intended for youth, and providers are actually a secondary audience, but to promote conversations between teenage patients and their providers And so it actually, there are three or four teams that we'll have in the video and providers as well. And that'll be something that the GYT campaign can offer to our partners to disseminate, likely at the end of April. And like I said, hopefully there'll be some kind of glitzier MTV-related programming that we can share with our partners either April or May.
As to what health departments can do to get involved in the campaign, I have to apologize for our cloak and dagger secrecy, but when you engage with a partnership, it's kind of like engaging with a new sex partner. You adopt all of the bureaucracy that those organizations have, as well as their rules. And so, you know, all of our bureaucracies have to work together and agree with each other. But in terms of what clinics can do and what programs can do, one thing that we're trying to do with the GYT campaign is to encourage testing, and then to encourage it not just on the online or on TV or on their mobile phones, but all the way down into the level of the community and into the clinic. So kind of like, let's say, the Target brand or the Amazon.com brand, you see it on television, you see it online, you see it on the boxes that get delivered to your doorstep, you see the logo in public in different places. So we need the clinics to be able to identify themselves as GYT clinics, to say, this is a clinic where it's okay to ask to GYT. This is a clinic where we accept and we do not judge you for wanting to get tested for chlamydia. So, you know, wear the buttons, use the stickers, GYT up your clinic, use the palm cards in the community, and, you know, advertise that this is something that you want people to be talking to you about. I'd say that's one of the more valuable things. Anybody else?
Hi, I'm Michael Podgers. I'm from Sex Out Loud, which is UW-Madison's peer-to-peer sexual health service. So I'm part of that 15 to 25 demographic, actually. I guess my first question...
You want to take a survey?
Maybe we can do the surveys at campus, because we do participate in GYT. We have tons of new posters. I got plenty of stickers, but I guess my first question is, especially as a peer educator, how can we talk to people in that age range about making open, honest relationships with their doctors and their medical professionals? Because in the same way, I feel like you might not necessarily think, oh, I should talk about sex with my teachers or parents, young people will think the same way about their doctors. How do you get them to go and be open and honest and trustful, and also say, yes, I want to get these tests, rather than have to search for, like, a clinic or something?
That's a really important question, and it's a question that Dr. Curran brought up last night in his talk, where, you know, if you walk in the door, if a teenager walks in the door and says, hey, I think something about chlamydia, and anybody frowns at them, they're never coming back. Mm-hmm. And so you wasted an opportunity. So part of it is that we have to educate our healthcare professionals to be as open and willing to discuss it as possible. As part of the GYT campaign, we do actually have talking tips. Those are, you could see them at CDC's booth 111. The GYT materials are out there. We have talking tips for talking to your provider and talking to your partner about getting STD tested, and those are also available on the GYT site. We're also trying to encourage a normalization of the conversation. GYT is an acronym that's out there for get yourself tested. It doesn't say STD, it doesn't say you're a hoe, it doesn't say you're dirty, it doesn't judge you, it says get yourself tested. It doesn't even say what for. The idea is that they go in and ask. So there are things that you know, we need to increase on both ends of this conversation. I think the only way to really open the conversation with your providers is to just say it and say, you know, what do I need to know about STDs? Tell me what I need to get tested for. And that's a really hard thing to say. I don't know how to make that easier.
Okay. And then my next question is, and I hate it because it's a bit of a critique, but I love the texting campaign where you can text and get where there's an STI testing location. So, of course, I was sitting here trying it out as you guys were speaking, being a good student, ignoring you talking. So what I did was, though, I texted in my zip code for where I live in Madison, which is right next to the University of Wisconsin zip code. Unfortunately, it did not give me a testing clinic, which it did when I texted in the University of Wisconsin zip code. So are there anything going on to expand that, to improve it, to make sure that somebody who might be within a 3-minute walk of a location and still get that location, and expand clinics. So they also did where I live, where I'm originally from, Chicago, and it didn't have the clinic I had always gone to before, even though it was a great clinic.
So one issue that comes up, there's a couple different issues that you're bringing up. First of all, the testing locator only has information on sites that are available to everyone and are open to everyone. So they won't have a university clinic.
Okay.
And it won't have, you know, ideally it's not going to have like my doctor's office, who would of course test me if I walked in the door, but he's not open to everybody. So that's one thing. The other thing is that the testing locator only returns one testing site per test. And if there are multiples that fit into the same zip code or the same 5 mile radius or whatever, it will randomly choose one of those. It'll choose the Planned Parenthood first, and then after that it's a random choice. So it's going to come up differently each time you try it, probably.
And can I just make a plug that if I encourage everyone to go to the either BYT or findacitytest.org website and make sure that your clinic is in the system if it is open to everybody.
And if not, there are places where you could say, add my clinic.
Yes, exactly.
Well, and also thank you very much for what you're doing.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Ben Myers. I'm with the New York State Health Department. First of all, thank you for the consent anyway. We've been really trying to promote GYT to our local health departments and our IDP providers and Planned Parenthood within New York State for the last couple of years. To add on to what he just mentioned, we encourage all of our clinics to make sure their information is updated. When we send out our surveys to update our website, we remind them, please check at findacitytest.org, update your information. We do that with all of our clinical providers and whatnot. My question is, we've been running a Facebook campaign for about a year, and some of our results are very similar to what Rachel, to what you presented on. Have you done any analysis, or is there any plan to do analysis on what types of posts garner the most user interaction? We've been playing around with a lot of different things, and it seems like the second we start, you know, finding out that people really like it when we tell them to like something, then all of a sudden the numbers drop off or Facebook changes. So I was wondering your ideas on what you found.
Well, we actually haven't thought about doing that, and in looking at this, the analysis that we did, it is kind of a crapshoot what generates a lot of comments. And again, it was very different for the CDC page than it was for our GYT. Our GYT just did not get that many comments, though people posted all the time. Anything controversial will always get people posting stuff. Like herpes or anything stigmatizing, and I don't know if that's good advice to get people to do it. But we've found that the CDC in general, the page in general, one of the things that they have tried to do that actually is getting people to respond and engage more is, I mean, they'll do little things like if you're like around Heart Healthy Month, they said if you're like us, if you're wearing red, that gets a lot of people interacting, or they'll put up polls like. And we're actually thinking about doing it for this month. We're creating a poll that would be like, you know, true or false, you can always tell if you have an STD, and then people have to interact, and it gives you a gauge of, you know, how much information they actually know about, say, STDs or whatever topic it is. So engaging in that way, maybe getting people to actually like because of something, could be something random, or putting on posts or polls, like, where they can, you know, engage in that way. I would try that.
There are also badges that you may have seen on Facebook, and you can have a thing on Facebook that changes your profile picture to like a poster like this person stands with Planned Parenthood or whatever, and it points an arrow at your picture, or it points, you know, there are ways of changing your own profile, and encouraging people to do that can sometimes work as well.
And just one, I'm sorry, Ricky.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, we've also had success with posting videos about STDs and getting comments to that. And I also just wanted to make a note that the herpes bombardment that we got was in response to a post that was targeting providers saying 2010 STD treatment guideline wall charts and pocket guards are available. So it really, it came out of nowhere, and we were not prepared for it.
Yeah.
So this year we've prepared, you know, a distraction post and a response to try and help with that.
So the other thing we just recently learned about is this thing called Twibbons, which is kind of what Mary's referring to, where you can actually add like things to your page, so you could have, you know, so you could have a bow tie, like a fake bow tie that says, you know, GYT or something on it. But it's a term that I literally just learned called Twibbins. And it is Facebook related, not Twitter related, so check that out.
Hi, I'm Nancy Beeson from Michigan, and I have a couple questions, mostly for all of you, but they're all quick. One is, Melissa, are you able to share your distribution? You know how you showed your map across the state, or all the national map, where the kits went? Because we keep track on the ground level in Michigan, but then people are apt to go to your site to order a kit too, and we kind of lose track of who those people are. Can you give Satan that information, or is that...
Yeah, we can send that to you. Okay. I can give you my contact information.
Okay.
We can send that to you.
Okay, thanks. And then this question is regarding the established post guidelines for Facebook. We are meeting with our media folks in the next couple of weeks, Karen and I, and it would be nice if... Can you share those guidelines?
Sure. I can also email those to you.
Okay.
Unless you want me to say them out loud. I mean,
CDC also has a social media toolkit that they produced out of whatever division that now produces those things. And it has some pretty good guidelines and rules for the guidelines that CDC would use, and you could use those as a template if you're interested.
And that's cdc.gov/social media.
Okay.
But I'll get your information.
Thank you. And this is for the Planned Parenthood representative. Now, you mentioned that you have 800 Planned Parenthood sites across the United States. Do you have a feel for what the uptake is for all of those sites? I mean, I'm specifically asking for Michigan, but I can get that from you later. But, you know, I mean, not everyone, I mean, everybody has a different level of participation. Mm-hmm. We see that in Michigan. Mm-hmm. So, can you kind of give me a feeling for uptake?
Yeah, so we have 800 health centers, and so I'll just make the quick distinction. We have 800 health centers. We have 127 youth programs that we sponsor on college campuses. So my data was really looking at the youth component of it. I have a whole other data set that was around health center participation that I didn't share today. For youth events, we are actually seeing over the last 2 years, and I think it's like, the more new stuff we give them, the more willing they are to participate. And so the new stuff we're repackaging. It was evidence today. And so when we have new stuff to give them, there's an uptick in participation. When we have kind of the same stuff, unless we can figure out a way to jazz it up, which I think the partners have been really great at figuring out a way to jazz things up, it can level off. But I think for the most part, we've seen it be from 2009 to 2010, there was a large uptick. It was still a relatively new campaign for our campuses. From 2010 to 2011, it stayed a little bit static. Part of that's also just a function, though, of our campus groups being more or less active in general, right? So those numbers are so based on student participation and student leadership and who's driving that. So, that's the long and short answer, and it really varies by region.
Okay, thank you. And then my last question is, compared to last year's campaign for GYT, you were able to order them individually. Will that come as the months go on, or is it just the kit and it's
money. If we have money, we'll have everything available for order, which we would really like to be able to do. At this point, all we were able to buy was the kits this year, and we didn't have any of the, we wanted to make sure there were as many kits as possible, and so we didn't have a lot of individual items. If we do get print money again, which the government is pretty much cracking down on at this point, we will try to get that out. But the main thing that we would probably be able to produce is paper. The government isn't too excited about anybody printing things like t-shirts or any other kind of doodads, other than brochures. So if we get things, it'll probably be brochures.
Thank you.
Absolutely, thank you.
Hi, my name is Patty Koo. I'm from University of Texas, Pan American, Texas. It's so great to come to Facebook and Angel. It's nice to meet you. But my question is about gender. Our percentage is completely flipped. We had a few
our percentage was half of the men. So is that what's skewing? Is that why we're opposite? We're actually opposite of the Planned Parenthood numbers that you posted as well. We were higher percentage of we were 6.5% on our female and 3.7% on our male, and you were 5.9% on your male. I mean, like, completely flipped. Is that because we had so many men come in?
Gosh, it's really hard to say. I mean, are there Planned Parenthood areas?
Yes, actually, their numbers are tricky because when I tried to benchmark with them a couple of years back, they were way down there. They were like 1 or 2%. It was really odd. Like, they had to cut numbers or something.
Well, yeah, it's a really under-resourced affiliate down there.
Male,
Well, yeah, that's why I'm thinking the males would be with you and the females would be at Planned Parenthood. But
it's been really helpful for us to see that benchmark, and we got really excited when we compared numbers. I was wondering about that. If you could, well, I may talk to you afterwards.
Well, I think it would be an interesting question as well to ask if you have men in your clinic, ask where the women are going. You know, say, wow, I'm seeking, just ask people on campus even where women go for health care, because maybe women aren't going to that particular clinic for some reason, and maybe there's something else available.
Well, I don't know. I think it's just that we get a good outcome of the men when I look at the other numbers and, and see that. But anyway,
And Patty has a GYT poster out, 127.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you.